Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 187, recorded on September 5th, 2013. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
Oh, hey, Michael. It's awesome, as usual.
Excellent. You know. Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good.
It's been, you know what? I have to report, because I always talk about how good the weather is here.
Yeah.
The last... Not now, it's dried out, but like a couple days ago,
yeah,
it was
dried
hot
out.
And humid. Well, humid. We never get humidity. It gets warm.
Yeah.
But it was like steamy here. Weird.
Huh.
But it's good now. Now it's just hot. Hot
yeah.
as hell.
Well, I know it was dry. I mean not to make light of a current fire situation.
Right. No, it was definitely dry, but I know a couple days ago it was like sticky.
Oh, okay. Can you guys hear that fan in the background? It's kind of grindy. Yeah, my Drobo, I got the second gen 4-bay Drobo, and the fan is just on its last leg. So it's one of those things, it's in my room usually, and I have to turn it off now, like fully off to actually get some sleep because it gets really loud. But I have a new fan coming that I'll hopefully be able to install. So if it gets loud, let me know. So we have something fun to talk about, something real instead of rumors and maybe fake real pictures of things that are...
Would that be colorful too?
Yeah, it's colorful and bright.
Crayons. I love crayons. This is the best show ever.
It's not actually crayons, Jeff.
Screw it. I'm out of here.
So Apple sent out their invitation for a September 10th media event. And the tagline is, this should brighten everyone's day. And it has some, you've probably seen it already.
Will it really brighten Google's day?
Not, yeah, okay, so not everyone. Not Samsung's day, probably not Google's day. Probably not Nokia's day. Although Nokia is off in their own world.
Microsoft brightened their day.
Yeah. So it has a bunch of colored dots with the colors that we've been expecting to be in the iPhone 5C. And yeah, I believe that the consensus is we're only going to be seeing iPhone stuff there. So iPhone 5C and iPhone 5S. No iPads. Right?
Right.
No.
iPads end of September, beginning of October, maybe?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But not next week.
Why do you guys think that is? Because a lot of people say that, oh, Apple doesn't want to take any of the spotlight away from the iPhone, so they want to have two separate events for the iPads and for the iPhones, but I'm not sure that really matters too much. I think that it has more to do with the fact that iOS 7 for iPad may not be as fully baked as it is for the iPhone.
See, and I think it's about making sure that they don't dilute the iPhone message.
Fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. Why? I mean, that's how they typically operate when they do these launches. They're very focused on a certain segment that they want people to pay attention to.
Do you think we're going to see anything unexpected? And I would guess it would be software-wise, other than what we can do with the fingerprint sensor. You think we're going to? What do you think we're going to see?
I have no idea. But there's always at least one or a couple features that Apple tends to hold back from even developers.
What do you think?
In these launches. So I have no idea what it might be, but...
Maybe a SDK for the fingerprint sensor.
That would be something, yeah.
Or SDK for Siri.
That would be even better.
That would be awesome.
Super awesome. Probably won't happen.
But that's the kind of thing. I mean, you're thinking in the kind of vein that I'm thinking.
Right. Or maybe like upgrade pricing or trials on the App Store.
That would be huge.
It would be huge. So I had this further down on the list, but we should talk about it since we're talking about it already. And that is what Omni Group did last week, right? Last week or two weeks ago.
Yeah, that was short-lived, wasn't it?
Yeah, so what they did was, and this is for Macs only, but on the Mac App Store, you can purchase OmniFocus and a few other Omni Group apps. And the unfortunate thing about that is what Omni Group typically does, because their apps are expensive and they're totally worth the price they are marketed at, they do the upgrade pricing when new versions come out. But in the Mac App Store, as in the iOS store, there is no upgrade pricing. So if you wanted to get the newer version, you would either be buying an entirely new version for a full price, or they'd be giving it away for free to the people who have already purchased it. And at $50 a pop, that just doesn't make sense. So what they did was come out with a free app that allows them to verify that you purchased said app with the Mac App Store, that you actually purchased it, and then they issue you an Omni Group issued serial number. Is that
product
correct?
Key, yeah, product key. It was called Omni Keymaster.
Yep, I like that name, Keymaster.
Gozer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, really cool idea, right? Totally got around the stupid Apple nonsense. Well, this week they shut it down because, well, I don't think they shut it down. I think Apple shut it down.
They didn't say exactly why, but we can all kind of infer, can't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was based
they did a very nice job with their blog post and not, you know, saying anything, but just mysteriously it was like, yeah, we can't do this.
Well, Omni Group has been around forever, and they have a really great relationship with Apple. So when Apple says don't do something, they kind of have to.
But to be clear, we're assuming that's what happened.
Yeah, we're definitely assuming that. But I would say that it's very likely that's what happened. So that's kind of bogus that Apple is doing that. Now, whether or not that says one way or another if Apple is planning on bringing upgrade pricing to the App Store.
And I think they're not.
Man,
I can speak
no,
to that.
They're not. No, not
anytime soon.
No, they're simply not.
Not ever. Not ever.
Exactly. Apple isn't about upgrade pricing. What they did was they changed their prices for their products so that they could sell them at a consistent price point every time a new version comes out. And anyone else that wants to do something different, from Apple's perspective, they can go pack sand.
Well, what I'm saying is that, you know, Apple is doing the typical thing that they do, which is disrupt markets. And I just had a thread with somebody on Twitter about this earlier today. And the thing is Apple's not afraid to disrupt markets, even when it's their own market. And in this case, it's their developer application market. And pretty much what they're saying, and I've been talking about this a lot on the MacCast, is what I'm calling the app New World Order. And that is, this is how software is going to be sold from this point forward. And it does not involve free trials. It does not involve upgrade pricing. What it involves is aggressive, competitive pricing right from the get-go, and you put out a new version, and you're going to have to put out a new version at a full price. There is no more, Apple's saying there's no more upgrade pricing anymore. This is how we're going to sell apps. We're going to sell you the app for a set price. And then when a new version comes out, it's going to be a whole new app and you're going to rebuy it at a set price. That's it. That's what they've defined. And you can either take that model or, like Jeff said, you can pack sand.
You can pack sand.
Yeah. And we're all going to rail and complain, and then it's going to settle out, and this will just be the new app world order, and then it'll be the norm until something else happens, and then we'll all complain again.
Now, the big question,
I don't
though,
like it. I mean, just to be clear, I'm not happy about it. As one of those people who likes upgrade pricing, I like developers' ability to price their app at a full price and then offer upgrade pricing. I think it has a marketing value. Thing is Apple's saying, look, moving forward, you're going to have to accept the new model and figure out how to adjust your business practices and model to this new order. And if you don't, then you know, your apps aren't going to be in our app stores.
But this,
the sand, this, you can pack it.
Yeah. This totally hinders developers from developing high cost, high quality apps, though.
Does it? Does it?
I think that it does.
That remains to be seen. We're assuming that because we're trying to, again, apply the old model to the new app world order.
Yeah, but
the thing is, you got to develop a new model.
Based on, but what is Apple basing this new world order upon? Because
they're basing it on that they know better than you do.
Only because they have ostensibly figured something out that we haven't.
No, I don't know if it goes that deep. I think they're
thinking. It has to. Apple doesn't just do things for no reason.
I think they're thinking consumer first, like they always do. I mean, this actually really benefits the consumer.
It does, maybe right, in the short term. But if you get into a situation where you have someone who purchased OmniFocus 1,
mm-hmm,
and that thing is $40.
Okay, but
iOS,
now it's $20 or $25.
It's either for OmniFocus 2, it's either free, which is absurd. It cannot be free because it's a whole new app, or it will be.
No, it's OmniFocus 1 wouldn't be in the new app world order, OmniFocus 1 would not have been $40. It would have been $25.
So how are they making money?
And then OmniFocus 2 is $25, and OmniFocus 3 is $25.
How are they making money if they're not getting what they feel is a realistic price for the effort they put into the app?
Yeah, I'm totally with you.
So what you're saying is you have to build in the fact that you're going to have future versions that you want people to pay for again.
Yeah,
and that's why you would price it that way.
Force developers to think a lot more seriously about how they initially price their apps, which actually may, in the long term, be a good thing, because I think it may stop some of this race to the bottom kind of pricing.
I think it's the opposite, because what you just said is it lowers the cost of the app inherently.
The initial cost, but it raises the upgrade cost, right? Potentially.
No, I think what you're
potentially,
aren't you saying that it just takes the upgrade cost and applies it to the initial buy-in cost?
No, what it does is it spreads the initial cost of the app over multiple updates.
So you're incentivized to make sure you make a good app that people are going to want to buy the new version for.
But you can't guarantee that people are going to buy the upgrade version.
Guarantee people are going to buy your app in the first place.
That's true.
And you can't guarantee that people are going to buy the upgrade version either, because another problem in this new app world order that I'm talking about that I think isn't addressed is what happens to the person who wants to buy version 1. Right. So I buy version 1. I'm very happy with it. I'm happy with all the features. Version 2 comes out. You know what? I'm not really interested in version 2. I'm happy to stick with version 1. Well, guess what? I bought version 1 on the App Store, and it's now been replaced with version 2, and the developer has pulled version 1 from the App Store because they don't want to have 2 in there to confuse consumers. They don't want to have version 1 and version 2. Consumers don't know what to buy.
Or at the very least, they're not updating
version 1. I need to reinstall version 1. Oh, it's not there anymore.
Yeah. Then you're totally hosed.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple's okay with that.
Again,
because that's not how their business model works.
Okay, so how much do you think this ties into what it seems Apple has been doing with ebook pricing and all of that, the whole DOJ investigation of ebook pricing? Because I didn't really care too much about this story, this ongoing story, until I saw the email exchange between Phil Schiller and Steve Jobs from November 2010. Did you guys see this?
Yeah.
So essentially,
I'm curious to know what your problem, why that triggered you.
Okay, so essentially what this says is Phil Schiller saw a commercial for the Kindle, and the Kindle commercial showed someone buying a Kindle book, and then either on a Kindle or on the Amazon store or what have you, and then using it on a bunch of different platforms, including the iPad. And his thought from that was, it means it's easier to switch from iPhone to Android. essentially, or potentially. And the conclusion that Steve Jobs came to was you have to lock them into using their own system, lock them into using Apple's system, which is where we are today, where there are no in-app purchases, for the sole purpose of locking people into Apple's system and not taking a strange perspective on customer loyalty. And that's why this is why this is triggered for me when we talk about the forcing developers to not have upgrade pricing and whatnot, because it's, I mean, I guess you could say on one,
they aren't, and to be clear though, they're not forced from not having upgrade pricing. They're forced from not having upgrade pricing if they want to sell their apps on the Mac App Store.
This is true, but you can't have upgrade pricing on the iPhone. You can't do anything except for use the App Store on the iPhone.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
So it just...
So you can go develop Kindle apps or Android apps.
I just have the feeling that Apple's going to have to let go of this sort of control and focus on...
I think their business model for the past couple of years proves you wrong.
I agree. You're wrong, Michael. They don't have to let go of this, and they won't.
I think they do. I think that the current situation...
Or suffer what?
Or suffer defeat to Android.
That's not going to happen.
I think it will happen. Apple needs to get its crap together and quit trying to be a big bully and actually realize what they're doing. Because they want all this control because they just want control.
This conversation, when you talk about Apple, comes up. I've been having this conversation with people for 25 years.
I understand
in different forms.
And I would defend Apple on the topic of control in many facets. But there are certainly things, there are certainly aspects of control that Apple has surrendered in the past.
Because
it makes good business sense.
Just to be clear, I'm totally on your side on this app thing. I think it's jacked and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Okay? I want everybody to understand that.
No, I understand that.
I am explaining the way Apple's doing things and my understanding of Apple doing those things. That doesn't equate to me liking necessarily what Apple's doing. But
understanding is not an endorsement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so coming back to this, though, Apple's always operated under this mentality and they've always been successful. So I don't see with the way their culture is, they're going to really be particularly concerned about this because they've proven over and over again that when it comes to their bottom line, these tactics and this philosophy works for them as a company. I'm not saying it works for every company, and other companies have tried it and failed miserably at it.
Okay, well, here's what you do. You ask the question, because Apple is a consumer-centered company.
Yes.
How does what they are doing, let's say with no upgrade pricing, how does that benefit the consumer?
Again, how are developers being forced to work around that? A couple things are happening. One, developers are being forced to sell their software at lower prices. Consumers like lower prices.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that.
Developers are being forced to sell upgrades to everybody at lower prices. Lower prices, consumers like lower prices.
Right. And you eliminate confusion over multiple app versions. Customers don't like confusion.
Yep. Yeah.
It
simplifies the process in a lot of ways, not to the benefit of the developer per se, but very much to the developer or to the benefit of the consumer.
Well, that right there is precisely the point, because looking long term at it, I feel, at least at this point, and I'm fully ready to be swayed and shown the light of why Apple is doing this.
There's not light for developers. This is the thing.
Well, that's well.
And so I know where you're going. Probably go ahead, but go.
Well, you know where I'm going, and that is, in the long term, if you piss off the developers, they're going to go away, and then the consumers are going to be pissed because your platform has crappy apps.
Here's the secret sauce that Apple knows.
Okay.
Even if you piss off the current developers, there's a lot of money sitting on the table in those app stores.
And developers will stay.
Not if the good developers go somewhere else.
The developers will stay.
There's still going to be good developers who are going to want. There's too large of a pool of money sitting there. And actually, for the developers who are willing to stick around and stay, they're probably better off because it means less competition.
I guess ultimately, no matter what happens with this, I hope that it ends up working out well for the consumer, and that part of what I think Apple has always tried to stand for is saying we want this amount of control, but at the same time, the control adds to the whole, as in it makes it easier to do things or to use the product. Or to understand the product. And at the same time, the product is ultimately better than something else that has less control. And it's better because of many reasons. And one of those reasons can be because there are fewer ways to do a thing, whether it be buying an app or performing an action in the interface, what have you. And so, as long as Apple continues to innovate on those fronts where the whole is better, is easier and more enjoyable, then I think that they can get away with the stuff. But if it comes to a point where the apps are hurting because the developers are hurting because they can't make enough money to do what they need to do, I suppose then you have a problem. But at the same time, you could say, well, maybe the developers aren't making enough money to do what they want to do because they're pricing their applications incorrectly. And then you have to decide whether or not what Apple is doing and the restrictions that Apple is imposing is actually forcing the developers to do one thing or another, or if they just haven't figured out how to go along with the restrictions that Apple is imposing, because ultimately those restrictions make it easier for everybody. And I guess that's what we're trying to figure out. And if what Apple is trying to do is keep us on that path of no upgrades, no upgrade mm-hmm. pricing, if that truly does pan out, I don't know. I suppose they need to provide more guidance other than just saying there's no upgrade pricing.
Well, and that's the one thing that they could do and could do a better job
and,
at.
And that's, so that's
Apple,
part of their,
has,
their job as the platform manufacturer. I mean, you can look to things like the iOS human interface guidelines. That is a perfect example of you could say, well, Apple will just create the operating system and create a bunch of stock apps, and you can observe those stock apps and how they interact with one another and how the interface looks. And you could say they don't need to create the human interface guidelines because it's implied with the stuff that they have. But at the same time, it's important for the developers to understand the design language of the product, because if you have apps on the store that don't interact and have the same sort of design language as the other ones, then it hurts the entire platform. And I think at this point,
right. then you get sort of, Android.
Well, yeah, no, I understand that. But I think at this point, you have that same sort of confusion. If Apple is truly on a path of very thoughtfully not allowing upgrade pricing, then I think they need to make it more apparent to developers what their thoughts are, other than just saying no.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because this was in this conversation I was having today, I came to the same sort of conclusion that really, so Apple has defined this new app world order in terms of buying and selling apps and set up a marketplace for it. But what they really haven't done is define for developers and people what the mechanisms are in there to be successful within that within that definition. And the only thing that they have done, and the reason why I think Apple is definitely on this path and they're not going to change, is if you look at how they've priced their apps.
Like Mac OS X, for example.
They're doing it by example. So you can look at iWork. You can look at Final Cut 10. You can look at, what's the new audio? The audio one they just updated.
Logic.
Soundtrack. Logic.
Soundtrack.
Was it Soundtrack or Logic? Can't remember.
Oh, yeah. Logic. Logic.
Yeah. Logic Pro 10, right? They are defining exactly what we're talking about. It's the price is lowered. The initial price is lowered for everyone.
So
but when
continue
the new
buying
version comes
into
out,
it.
Huh?
You can continue buying into it.
Yeah. But they haven't really laid that out in some sort of document, as far as I know, for developers, or sort of said, look, this is how we think you should be selling your apps, or giving some guidance. So yeah, they could be doing a better job. If this truly is what they're doing, and it feels like they are, they could be doing a much better job of helping developers on the marketing and pricing and that side of this marketplace. And I think a lot of developers are struggling in that area to try and figure out how do we move. And part of it is because we've got a lot of developers who are used to the model that we're all used to, where I put out my app, it's at a certain price, I'm able to reward my loyal customers with upgrade pricing, I'm able to market to new customers with free trials. All that stuff is now gone. So it's, okay, how do I succeed under the new model? And Apple's really not helping guide in that area. So if they're not going to provide the old tools, which I don't think they're going to do, and the old mechanisms for selling, they probably need to do a better job of helping developers understand the new way of marketing and selling apps within their ecosystem.
Yep. Now, would you say that this same discussion is relevant to the idea of free trials?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it should be a session. At the next WWDC, there should be probably a whole track on selling and marketing apps in the Apple ecosystem.
You know, I think there might be a session about that, and I'm not sure how. It would be interesting to see. I'll investigate, and if I find something, I'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, maybe there was. I haven't gone through all of the stuff that happened at WWDC this year.
Or if you know, and you want to be anonymous, fully email and let us know.
I mean, yeah, I'm in a iOS developers group that is sort of focused. I just talked about Clayton Morris and I had a conversation, and there's going to be a Maccast going out on Friday. That's our interview, but he's developed an app over the last couple of years and has been marketing it. So we talk about a lot of these sort of things in that episode, and it's this group that I'm in. I talk about the San Diego iOS developers group. The guy that founded it really came up. He came up with this concept he calls ICAM. And so the group is targeted not just at programmers, but at all what we see as the four pillars of app development. And so what ICAM stands for is, I always get this messed up, coding, art, marketing, and the I is ideas. So ideas, coding, art, and marketing. And these are the four things that need to sort of come together to really have a successful application. And so most developers have the coding part down, right? And maybe they have the idea part. Maybe they came up with the idea or somebody else. But art and marketing often get sort of left out. And marketing is probably the biggest one where I think most app developers struggle with. Because a lot of times they can find a designer, or maybe they know a designer who can help with the UI of their app. But marketing is this big sort of amorphous black hole for, I think, a lot of developers.
Yeah, and I think in that case...
It's very scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that ultimately that points to Apple needing to step up and show the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least have some sort of template or guidance, something. So... Well, we have something to talk about that is not frustrating or difficult to understand and undefined, and that is Squarespace, because they're awesome. It's everything you need to create an exceptional website, and right now, the month of September, we usually give 10% off with the coupon code WHC9, but this month only, just in September, WHC9 gives you 20% off all of the plans on Squarespace at squarespace.com. I'm sure you know already that Squarespace is the best place to create a website, be it a personal website, a portfolio website, or something for a small business. pretty much anything that you want to do. I mean, they take care of business no matter what you want to do with Squarespace. And of course, you know that they have that you can make tons of blogs. You can actually make a site that has blogs, pages, and galleries all in one website. That's just included in the package. They also have Squarespace Commerce, where you can sell things, either material or virtual goods. They just launched Squarespace Commerce in the UK, which is great. They now have the ability to take donations with Squarespace Commerce. And what's really cool, they also have now support for custom form elements for selling items. So if you sell something that is more than just here's a thing, press the buy button. So if you want to have, if it's something that you can customize the, maybe like the color or the size or the style, you can make your own select lists or radio check boxes and all that stuff. You can do that with Squarespace, which is awesome. And that's the kind of thing that I love about Squarespace, because they think through all the stuff and they try to make the task of making your own website very easy. New for photographers, this is really cool. They now, if you have a bunch of metadata built into the photos that you take when you upload them, now Squarespace has the option of importing all of the stuff and auto-filling it for your gallery, the stuff like title, description, tags, geolocation, all that stuff that you already have in those photos. You don't have to redo it when you upload it to Squarespace, which totally rocks. And of course, all the stuff on Squarespace is drag and drop, including photos from your desktop. You just drag them up and throw them up there. They have cool stuff for restaurants now. Recently, they have a menu block, so you can create and easily manage a menu. Open table block, so you can set up your restaurant reservations. Of course, they have the galleries to, and you can do multiple galleries for food. You have blocks for events, tons of stuff. I mean, it scales so well for personal stuff, all the way up to if you have a small business or a restaurant or anything. So like I said before, it's WHC9 for the month of September. It's 20% off right now. And in addition to that, we're doing a little promotion. So if you have or you want to start a Squarespace website, and I'd suggest that you do, we're going to do a little swag pack giveaway. So this month, send in the link to your Squarespace website, and we will take a look at them, and whichever one we think is the coolest, we will give a swag pack to. And the swag pack includes some Squarespace stickers, a t-shirt, and a notebook, all Squarespace branded, which I'm kind of want. I should ask if I can get my own swag pack, because I would like a Squarespace sticker. And based on whatever the coolest website is, by that I mean something that looks really cool, as well as something that utilizes those awesome Squarespace features that they have. So send it in, feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. Send the link to your Squarespace website. And if you don't already have a Squarespace website, it's the best time to jump on it now. You can get a 14-day free trial. Just go to squarespace.com, start going. I mean, immediately, you don't have to enter any details. You just select one of the templates. They're all beautiful. They're all mobile responsive. And when you're ready to give it a go, this month only, 20% off, WHC9. Check it out. Everything you
can
need.
Can I pile on a runner-up prize?
Sure.
Oh, fun.
Runner-up prize, I will award to the runner-up that we pick a We Have Communicators mug.
Cool. I like
That's
it.
That's really cool.
We'll do that. Sounds good. So, yeah, use the code WHC9, 20% off, and you know, if you have the coolest website, you get some swag too. And if you're even if you're the runner up. So check it out. It's everything you need to create an exceptional website. We thank them so much for sponsoring We Have Communicators. They totally rock. So with that, moving on. We've been talking about a lot of stuff, and it seems like we have a lot more to talk about. Did we mention that T-Mobile employees were seeing that September 20th through 22nd, they have blocked out vacation time. So nobody can take vacation, which typically means that something's going to happen.
And it wasn't just T-Mobile, right?
I would
imagine
it's
Apple
more.
Has a blackout around the same time.
I can imagine so.
The 15th yeah. through the 28th or something like that.
Definitely makes sense. And I wonder if that would imply pre-orders. They've been doing pre-orders in the past couple of years, right? So you can just sit at home and not be crazy.
Yeah, I think on the 10th they'll probably on the 11th they'll start pre-orders, I would imagine. The day after the announcement, they'll probably do the pre-order thing.
Yeah. So yeah, but looks like that or maybe that's going to be crazy. Yeah, probably Friday.
So they announced it on the 10th, so maybe the 13th. I know I'm looking at the calendar.
Friday the 13th.
Like, announcement on the 10th, pre-orders start the 13th, shipments start the 20th.
Yeah, I like how that sounds.
Yeah, that sounds totally plausible.
And I'm just guessing. I'm just like,
we're just pulling stuff out of our
butts. We know the events at the 10th now, for sure, but it would make sense that you know, Friday after the announcement, pre-orders start midnight, Friday the 13th. Oh, Friday the 13th.
Yeah. Wow. Yep.
Jason will be ordering his
iPhone. Yes, he will.
5S.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if he'll get
that's probably more of a red iPhone 5C, right?
Probably. Or I wonder he might get the champagne or maybe even the graphite. You guys see
about the red iPhone. They keep calling it the red iPhone 5C. Isn't it more of like a salmon?
Yeah. These colors are not vibrant. It's the salmon. It's the baby blue. It's the
baby poop green.
Yeah, I was going to say
kind of more of like a lime.
It is kind of well more green.
Limeish
green.
Yeah.
And the yellow is, depending on the pictures I've seen, it's either yellow or sort of yellow-orange-ish kind of thing. It's weird. They're like these muted neon colors, really. Like, I was thinking about, like, my neon Crayolas, and they're in that hue range, but much more muted, mm-hmm. It seems like.
You saw the graphite iPhone 5S,
that,
right?
If that color turns out to be true, that might be the one that I go for.
That's pretty sexy.
Yeah, that kind of graphite gunmetal color, that I think that looks really cool.
It looks just like the original iPhone.
That was my thing. That's funny you mentioned that. I said that on a couple episodes now, that it is a little bit retro because you get the black plastic with the sort of stainless back.
Yeah,
it's
anodized
a little
aluminum.
Bluish, though. I mean, it tends more toward the blue tones, but still.
I like it. It looks cool. And I think it'll be a little bit, it'll be slightly different in person, I think, because these photos typically don't fully represent what it'll look like, especially with stuff like champagne, those kinds of colors. I still don't think, do you think that it's going to have the white bars?
The champagne one? Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah. What I want to know is, because Gruber or somebody threw out that maybe the graphite one will replace the black one because they have had so much trouble with the black sort of scratching, and I guess anodizing the actual metal in that color has proven to be sort of problematic.
Mm.
And maybe the graphite won't show scratches as badly.
I'm down with that. I just hope they don't get rid of the white because I think that...
I don't think they'll get rid of the white.
Yeah.
But I only buy that because I think Apple doesn't want too many color options. The whole color option thing poses a whole inventory issue. And they had this really bad when they did the gumdrop iMacs from everything I read and understood about the supply chain, where like certain colors would become popular and then there were certain colors that just didn't sell at all.
Oh, yeah.
And I know at the time Apple was forcing resellers to buy them in even quantities because they didn't want to have too many of one color like lying around. And maybe we're past this now with sort of just-in-time kind of inventory mechanisms and stuff like that, so they can kind of maybe predict how many a retail store is going to need. But you start getting too many colors and they sort of have to stock the right amounts of the right colors to sort of meet demand. It gets really tricky from just a shipping inventory kind of perspective.
Yeah, but they seem to have that fairly well sorted out because they've been doing multiple colors for iPods for a while now.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like they have lots of inventory of one color just sitting around.
That's a much lower component price point cost versus, say, an iPhone, though. Right? I don't know about the iPad Touch, but certainly in like the Shuffles and the Nanos and things like that.
Hey, I have something a little tangential for you. My iPhone 5, it's a white one for what it's worth. The lens on it has some gunk under it. The camera lens.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that?
No, I don't know. I don't think so. But I've heard about it. I've seen it.
I totally think you don't wash your hands enough, Michael.
There's some tutorials online, I think, for how to get it out of there.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
If I find that, I'll include it in the show notes, because I jailbreak, and if I go and get my iPhone replaced, then I don't have my jailbreak anymore. So, but right now I have a camera that makes slightly less than awesome photos. So
they're artistic.
It's like a giant booger in the middle of the photos. Not that there's a giant booger that you can see on the actual lens. It's like a little dot of booger.
Don't pick your nose. Then you won't have that problem.
Don't pick it with my
iPhone. Wash your hands more often.
I should stop picking my nose with my iPhone. So,
always wear clean underpants in case you're in a car wreck.
No,
why is that?
Yeah.
Because pretty much don't you lose all bodily function when that sort of thing happens anyway?
Kind of crap yourself. Well,
some people do. I think it's more about your mom feeling embarrassed than about your welfare.
I mean, let's be honest. Is the EMT really going to notice as he's cutting off your underwear or care?
No.
He's probably more focused on saving your life, would hope.
No, here's the thing. My uncle is an EMT, or he was for a while, and he would totally... So what he does is he comes home and he tells his wife, hey, you should have seen the guy I just cut out of his car. He totally crapped his pants. So they do care. Well, they don't care. They just think it's hilarious.
They note that things like this happen. I really think, though, it's more about your mom being embarrassed that you were wearing dirty underpants. Than anything else. So really, it's not about you. It's about her.
Well, isn't it always about your mom?
Yeah.
Jeff can't see it because it's in flash, but here's a YouTube video on how to clean the dust out of your iPhone 5 camera lens.
Oh, perfect.
Well, it's a good thing I don't have dust in my iPhone 5 camera.
Does it involve... doesn't involve taking it apart, does it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
It's actually fairly easy to disassemble an iPhone 5. And I think you only have to get the front plate off, which is pretty easy. You undo the two screws, you push up, and then the screen flips away. And then I think you pretty much have access to the camera
lens. I have a warranty. I have like a 2-year expensive warranty on my phone, though.
They won't know.
Just back up your iPhone, take it in under warranty, get a new one, and then restore.
No, that doesn't work.
No, he can't because of the jailbreak.
I'm very well aware of that.
This is a trick.
The sacrifices you make.
This is a trick.
I didn't watch the video. I just Googled it.
I'm watching it now.
It's probably crap.
It's kind of making me uneasy. He's using a giant blade to looks like he doesn't even care that he's totally screwing up.
Well, it's not his iPhone. He borrowed his friend's. So, of course, he doesn't care.
Okay. That's what I usually do. Okay, where were we? Talking about underwear.
Maybe you can just take some compressed air and kind of shoot it in the side and at least dislodge that booger and push it off to the edge so it's not impacting your lens.
An impacted booger. An impacted lens booger. Yeah, that'll be included in the show notes. So getting back to whatever the hell we were talking about. Oh, we're seeing shipments of the iPhone 5C. They're totally like in the United States now. So some dude on a UPS truck is like totally opening Apple boxes and taking photos. Like a big jerk who's going to get fired.
Mm, interesting.
Do you guys see those photos? I don't like how they... The backgrounds, you know how they usually show the universe background or the Earth background, that like the whatever is going to be stock for each color. And so if you have the yellow iPhone 5C, it's a yellow background, or a blue background for the blue one, etc. The pink one was a little bit jarring.
Is this link in the show notes?
Mm-hmm. If you go to shipments of new iPhone models begin arriving in U.S.
Oh. We have show notes.
Yeah.
But actual, like, on the UPS truck photos, I don't see them.
I didn't say on the UPS. Well, I'm just speculating. Someone who has access to crates of iPhones is totally getting fired.
These are the Japanese pictures that we've seen. Yeah.
Okay,
the iPhone 5C pictures,
I guess,
in packaging.
They're not going to get fired because they're in Japan.
I want to see the ones in the U.S. So they're supposedly arriving in the U.S.?
Supposedly.
According to this Mac Rumors article?
Supposedly. I like this one, this article about how Apple is, according to the Wall Street Journal, and I think we've talked about this already, that they're supposedly testing iPhones with up to 6-inch screens, which I think is craziness. I don't think they'll do it. They're definitely testing things.
Yeah.
But they also think
they probably have 7-inch, 8-inch screens. I mean,
yeah, well, what they're saying, the Wall Street Journal, based on what their sources are saying, it looks like Apple is preferring the 4.8-inch screens, and they're expecting Apple to do something with it next year.
Well, look at this. Samsung had to put out a whole entire watch to deal with their ginormous screen problem.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so now Samsung just announced their watch. What is it called? The
Gear.
The Gear.
The Galaxy Gear.
$300.
And you have to pair it with a ginormous phone or a ginormous tablet.
Yeah, it doesn't even work with the GS4. It has to be the Note 3 or the Note 10.1.
Yeah, because they're saying
this watch is a big fail.
They're saying these screens are too huge. You need a small watch so that you don't have to look like a dork just pulling out your giant Note.
But it's not a small watch. It's a fracking tumor on your arm.
You know, you guys know I got a Pebble, right? Just to try and understand and figure out why we need a smartwatch. And I came to the conclusion that I don't think we need a smartwatch. I mean, it's cool. Again, I think I said this on the last show. The technology is super cool. I love it for all the technology that's in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't solve any problem. Now, maybe if I had a 6-inch phone, it would actually solve a problem, especially if I could take phone calls on my watch, which I think you can with the Gear, right? I haven't delved deep enough to know. Can you, like, actually answer and talk into it, like, a la Dick Tracy kind of style?
Yes.
You can?
That's my impression. But even though it has a speaker and a Bluetooth connection back to your other monolithic device, you can't play music through it.
Wow, and plus it's $300.
Yeah.
So you got to buy a $300
accessory.
You could just buy an iPhone to go with your Note.
Wow.
Or just buy a GS4 to go with your Note. I don't care what you do. You can just buy another phone to go with your crazy giant phone.
Yeah. Again, I don't know what problem it is solving, but again, I don't have a 6-inch phone, so maybe it would solve a problem for me.
Yeah.
I just choose to buy a smaller phone. So getting back to our conversation about, you know, Apple doing a... So it doesn't surprise me if Apple would be leaning toward a 4.8-inch upgrade rather than, you know, going into the gigantophone category.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Well, according to analyst Wanli Wang at CIMB Securities...
Mm-hmm.
He believes we're going to see the iWatch next year around $200. He says that based on channel checks, what was the company? There's a company something. I can't see it right now.
See, but and I think 60%
of
likely never see an iWatch.
Inventech, say they have the major portion of the contract to create the iWatch. But then again, I'm totally kind of leaning toward your side, Adam, where I'm not sure it matters that we ever have one.
We'll have one when Apple figures out why we need one.
Yes, exactly. And that's when we'll have one. But if there's no reason that they can ever come up with...
So I think they're hard working on the topic of why do we need an iWatch.
Right.
So there's a lot of experimenting going on. Apple's doing a lot of R&D. They're watching the space very closely. It's the same thing they're doing with the whole television thing.
Well, if you look at the trends, as we've seen over the years, phones have been getting bigger and tablets have been getting smaller. The demand for each of those has been going in those directions. And Watch is the opposite direction, at least for a phone. Now, if it's supposed to be paired with your iPad, maybe that makes sense, but at the same time, it makes less sense than being paired with your phone.
How come no one's talking iCom badge?
Yes, that actually...
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome?
I totally saw a dude at the library yesterday. He was wearing... He looked like a sad Indian Andy Anatko walking through the library with a comm badge on.
Sweet.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Anyway. So it looks like we're going to see an A7 processor with the next iPhone, 64-bit. In the 4S, and I like this one. Supposedly will include support for motion tracking, which I'm the only person on this panel that likes the idea of motion tracking. So you know, yep. so you can swipe things with your greasy hand because you've been eating ribs or whatever.
That's the stuff that I talked to Clayton about on the next MacCast. Yeah. So I'm just gonna get my plug in now.
Teaser for you. Yeah. I like the idea. We'll see. I think that if it's done right, then it'll work. But obviously, on the GS4, I think most people turn that thing off right away.
I've heard it doesn't even work all that well.
Well, I think that's why they turn it off, because it doesn't work too well. What else do we have here? A7X-based iPad mini and iPad expected to launch in the fourth quarter of this year, as we've been expecting. Yeah. But... Of course, the KGI Securities Ming-Chi Kuo, he says it's going to have an A7X, which I guess typically the iPads have had the X-based processor of whatever's in the current iPhone. This is a little bit closer together than typical release cycles like this in the past, but I guess since we're closing the gap between iPhone and iPad launches, I suppose it makes sense. And you got to have the extra graphics capabilities for the bigger screens.
We don't think they can get by with a tweaked A6.
Aren't they currently running on A6?
That's what I mean. But just a ramped up A6, do they jump to a full A7X or do they tweak the A6X?
Well, I can see the full-size iPad running the A7X and possibly the Retina Mini running the A6X. So A7 on the big one, A6 on the Mini.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Pulling stuff out of my butt, as usual.
Sure. Why not?
As one does.
Everybody else does.
How is that what's going on? Okay. Where are we now? I think that's it.
iCloud.
Oh, yeah, iCloud. Thank you. Yeah, so Apple, a couple weeks ago, they opened up the iWork for iCloud beta. Of course, that's the ability to do pages and keynote and numbers on the website. And, yeah, they kind of shut it down.
Too many people wanted to play with it.
Yeah.
I haven't even touched it. Have you touched it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like it.
You can drag and drop. I didn't even get a chance to play with it.
Drag and drop photos from the from your desktop. You just throw them in there on your browser, and you got the same awesome trick where you can, move a properly alpha channeled PNG with and the text will wrap around it in fancy ways. And
now, what I'm wondering is it very similar to the iOS version where it has limited functionality versus the desktop in terms of compatibility with fonts and all those sorts of things? So if I drop a document from desktop, pages, and I've used some funky fonts and I try and open it in iWork, iCloud, is it going to do the whole, hey, you've got weird fonts in here, we need to convert them sort of thing? I would assume it would. I haven't tried it.
Well, I can't imagine. I mean, it seemed like they had an extensive number of fonts, and I'm opening up a document here right now. They have an extensive number of fonts, but if it's something totally wacky that's not on a standard Mac installation, I don't think they're going to have it.
Yeah,
but they do. Yeah. They do have quite a few fonts. I think they don't have Myriad on here. They don't have the standard Apple font. But
right.
They have a lot of other stuff.
This came up in a conversation. Somebody was asking me about wanting to, have the most compatibility for moving sort of between environments. So now I guess this includes I work for iCloud, iOS, and Mac. And so my general recommendation was, hey, if you're going to do this, probably what you want to do is build it on iWork for iCloud, or build it, you know, do the initial layout or production either in iCloud or on your iOS device, and then bring it back to your Mac. And then at that point on your Mac, at least make sure you don't change any fonts or, you know, do anything outlandish. And then you should be able to migrate back and forth between your different environments pretty seamlessly. The problem people get into is when they start on the desktop, they can run into limitations on, I think, the other versions.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good advice. Start with your lowest common denominator. In this case, probably the web versions. So you have fewer chances for problems later on.
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see how well it handles sort of conversion when I've taken something that I've, you know, gone to town with on my desktop and then bring it into iCloud to work with it.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what types of problems we come up with. There's little big things that are issues that no one realizes until it's too late. Like if you take a Photoshop file and drop it into Keynote on your Mac, totally works. You can move it over to your iPad and your iPhone, no problem at all. And then all of a sudden your Photoshop files don't appear.
And that's great when you've handcrafted your presentation on your desktop, right?
Right.
And then you throw it in there and you want to make one edit, you know, before you get on the plane, and you suddenly realize
that you're completely screwed because you don't even have a usable Keynote file anymore, really.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, for what it's worth, it'll actually import a docx file, no problem. You just drag and drop.
Nice.
So I'm not sure if it's resaving it as something else. But anyway, so yeah, beta.icloud.com, right? Beta.icloud.com, and see if you actually have it. It's they've also updated it to have the iOS 7 look, except for the iWork icons, which are still kind of bubbly. So I think that's it, right? Nothing else to talk about? Unless you guys have anything else to talk about, I think it's time to talk about our picks. Adam, you have a pick?
Yeah, you know what? I just popped it open, and I'm trying to remember what it's called. Oh, Second Screen Experience. It's more of a generalized thing, but I was playing around with my Apple TV this past week because I was doing a presentation for a user group, and I was sort of poking around and doing some searching, and I ran across, so Disney and a la Marvel, by that same token, has a bunch of apps on the App Store that are called Second Screen Experience.
Mm.
Have you guys run across these?
No.
So I think they're specifically targeted at their Blu-ray titles. So they'll have them for different titles. So they have one for Avengers. They have some for some of their Disney movie content and things like that. But what it is you download the app, and then it has some audio technology in it where it will listen to, when you start playing a movie, either on your Blu-ray DVD, or I even tried this. I have Avengers I bought through iTunes. And so I was playing the Avengers movie on my Apple TV, and it will listen to the audio and then sync up the audio with the app on the iPad. And then as the movie is playing, the iPad will present additional content related to what's ever being displayed on the screen at the time. So you'll get like character bios, behind-the-scenes videos and photos, all that sort of stuff as you're watching the movie. So you can sit there with your iPad and the movie playing on your TV and get a whole second screen sort of experience. And I was actually very surprised at how well it actually worked and synced up just with the audio track. So it uses the mic in your iPad or your iPhone or what have you to actually handle the syncing of the content.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it was kind of fun, really little cool technology, and I played around with it a little bit. And you know, the one complaint I had was sometimes when you go in to view the additional content, it would stop the syncing up, and you just have to hit a little button again, and it would scan, and then it would sync back up again. So I wish it would pick up back up where it left off automatically, but you know, beyond that, it was just kind of fun. So you can get, again, additional photos, little behind the scenes pictures of the current scene that you're watching as you're watching the movie. So I thought it was kind of fun. And there's, you know, maybe a few dozen titles. So if you just search for like Second Screen on the App Store, you'll find them.
Neat. So you want to pick the Marvel, the Avengers one? We'll just call it.
Sure. If you have the Avengers movie, I know Iron Man 3 just came out, so I don't know if they have one for that yet, but early release on iTunes. But any of them, I mean, I think they have them for Bambi. I think I saw one for Bambi, some of the maybe Pixar films.
Smurfs.
There you go, Smurfs.
Prometheus.
But the one thing to know, I think the one key thing to know, because I wasn't sure, is they seem to be specifically targeted at the DVD, the Blu-ray releases, but it worked with the version that I bought through iTunes.
Oh,
because
good.
Again, it's just using the audio track of the movie to actually handle the syncing.
And that should be the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they do have a bunch of movies. That's cool.
So, Second Screen content from Disney Marvel.
All right.
This is my pick.
Cool. All right, Jeff, what is your pick this week?
My pick is a game, because sometimes you just need to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so my pick is Star Wars Pinball. And it's a really well-designed pinball game. And it's free for the iPhone and iPad. Well, iPod Touch also. And
is it?
I believe it hooks up with Game Center, and so you can see how your friends are performing in the game, and you can choose to fight for the rebellion or the dark side of the Force, and then that just changes which pinball boards you'll get in the games. And the graphics are really nice. I'm enjoying playing it on my full size iPad. It works really well for that size screen. And I'm assuming it would work well on the iPad Mini as well. On smaller screen sizes, I don't know. I haven't tried it on my iPhone, but I'm assuming it would just be a little bit too small. But you can do it, and there you go.
Cool. And it's actually it's free September 2nd through the 9th.
So this is a limited thing. I was going to say, I was going to ask if there was in-app purchase kind of stuff in it.
Well, pick it up now while it's still free.
Yeah.
I'm doing it right now.
Cool. Sorry. I didn't mean it was cool. I was just kind of exhaling at the same time. Let's see. What is my pick this week? My pick is FlightAware, and I think we've talked about Flight Radar before, right? Flight Radar 24, and that is a really cool website, but what I was looking for is primarily something I could use to track tail numbers of planes, because someone in my family just got a plane, and I want to know like what he's up to. So whenever he files a flight plan, I want to actually see that. So this app is totally free, and it gives you iOS push notifications of flights, either based on tail number or based on flight number. So the traditional way of tracking flights, it will also do that. And you can do a lot of different things in this. You can see nearby planes. It shows you weather based on the track. So you can see the actual filed flight path and where the plane is within the flight path and weather related to it. So there's a lot of stuff that you can see. So you can, it's like, for example, there's a... like recurring Delta, or not just Delta, but recurring flights, you know, the standard flight routes and that sort of thing. You can save planes to check out as they do things. You can search for different types of planes. You can just check out a map and see all the planes that are on a map nearby. There are tons of things that you can do. So if you're an aviation nerd at all and you want to see what's like flying overhead, it's free. So it's FlightAware, and yeah, check it out. I think you need to have a FlightAware account in order to do the notifications, but that's free too. So check it out. And with that, I think that's it. We got our iPhone picks and our show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. Tell a friend about the show. We always like that. Leave a review. That's how they rank up the show. So if you haven't left a review on the show, just leave a couple words. Just say it rocks if you think it rocks. And that helps us out. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is the email address. It's how you contact us. Send audio comments or whatever you want. Questions, feedback. We love it all. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. And of course, check out Squarespace, 20% off this month only using WHC9 as the code at checkout. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, at Jake Gamet on Twitter, and Zazzle.com/JGamet is the Zazzle store where you can get your We Have Communicators mug.
Or you can send in your Squarespace site.
Yeah, send in your Squarespace site. Don't forget that. So if you have a Squarespace site or you have been thinking about it, it's totally free for 14 days. Just do that. Create something cool.
There you go.
You'll win. Or just buy one.
Oh, yeah.
I have to do some pimping.
Okay, do it.
All right. So if for anyone that's going to be in Denver on September 18th, come to the Paramount Theater for Ignite Denver. I am speaking at the event. And my presentation is called Everything I Need to Learn About Life. I don't even know the name of my own thing. Everything I Needed to Know in Life, I Learned by Watching Muggles in Starbucks. There we go. And so I'll be talking about some of the things that I have seen and have ultimately posted on Fresh Brew Tales. So yeah. September 18th, Ignite Denver. It's at the Paramount Theater, which has, I believe, 1,300 seats. So there's room for you. Show up. Make me happy.
Yeah, and there are a lot of other things going on there, too, at the Ignite Denver. A lot of cool other talks as well as Jeff's. So make a day of it.
Yeah, actually, we did a run-through last night. And holy crap, there are going to be some awesome presentations.
Sweet. What are the dates again?
September 18th.
Cool. Check it out. Adam Christensen's at the MattCast, MattCast.com, at MattCast on Twitter, member.mattcast.com is the member show.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Thanks for being here, guys, both of you.
Thank you.
And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, at GetAppler is Appler on Twitter. And of course, check out Appler. The mobile site is up and ready for testing soon out of the pseudo beta that it's doing right now. It's sort of a quick run through before we push it out for everybody. So if you want to use the mobile site, just go to dev.getappler.com, dev.getappler.com, and soon it will be available to everyone. So with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.